Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels as always, and today we're having a really interesting conversation, and in fact a necessary conversation, and it's all about toxic workplaces. My guest today, Peter Economy, is a Wall Street Journal best-selling ghostwriter. He's the author of more than 120 books. Those books have gone to sell more than 3 million copies globally. Titles include What? I'm Working With Who? As well as Wait, I'm the Boss. He's also the leadership guy at Inc.com, which means he writes lots of articles, about 1,500 or so articles for Inc.com. And each month, there's about 500,000 page views, which is incredible. So it's a very topical session today to talk about all of these things. Now, in our conversation, we start off talking about toxicity, what it is, how to identify it, who's exhibiting those behaviors, how do we deal with those behaviors, what do we do as the leader of the business. We also then talk about leadership as the skill and the muscle that we want to develop as business owners. And Peter identifies a couple of key leadership traits, and we'd call those traits of the greats, that each of us can take on and become more effective in our role as leader. It's a really wide-ranging conversation. It's an interesting conversation, and Peter is indeed a wonderful conversationalist. He's really good at sharing his insights and converting that knowledge into something that's really useful and practical. So, as always, do have a pen and paper handy here because there's plenty of gold in there for you, and I know you're going to enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. So here's Peter Economy. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Jesse.
And you're coming to us all the way from San Diego, which is a fantastically beautiful and wonderful place. And you're coming into spring, we're going into autumn. You must be getting ready for those sea breezes to come rolling through very shortly.
We sure are. We're looking forward to it. San Diego is a wonderful place, and I highly recommend it for anybody to come visit us.
Well, I think you'll have, as soon as we can travel, I think you'll be here.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a little bit longer. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And I know. All got to get vaccinated somehow. Peter, you've written a bazillion books. You've authored many. You've ghostwritten many, nearly up to 120 books. And so we've got a wide range of things that we could talk about. But your recent book is What? I'm Working With Who? And I know that's a book about workplace toxicity and culture and all the rest of it. And I wanted to just start by asking you, when you sat down to write that book, what was the impetus? What was the prompt that you thought, I'm going to sit down and dedicate a good chunk of my life to this topic? It must be of importance. So I'm just trying to understand from your perspective where that sit in your priorities.
Right. So one of the other things I've done, in addition to writing a lot of books, more books than I can imagine, is I've written a lot of articles on Inc.com. So I'm the leadership guy on Inc.com. And I've written over 1,500 articles there. So what I learned from writing all these different articles about a wide variety of mostly leadership topics, management topics, you know, that kind of topic area, is that one of the kinds of articles I got the biggest response on was whenever I'd write about toxic workplace. Mm-hmm. So an article about these are the five people you need to get out of your life, you know, these five toxic people. Here's 7 ways to deal with the toxic people in your life, that kind of thing. And whenever I wrote an article about that, I'd get a lot of response. People are just, you know, first of all, you know, there's been a lot of research done in the toxic workplace area. And about 2/3 of employees say that they've worked in a toxic workplace at least once, you know, one toxic workplace. Then I think about another 1/4 of those people say that they've worked in more than one toxic workplace. So it's really a huge problem. And I'm sure everybody, you know, every one of us has our own story of working in a toxic workplace or having worked for a bad boss. So that's what really kind of triggered me to go more deeply into the topic and to actually write a book about it.
So let's talk about toxic workplaces for a moment. What typically might be on display in a toxic workplace? Because there'll be some people who might be thinking, what's kind of normal rough and tumble of the workplace, and where does it cross into toxicity?
Yeah. Well, it's a wide range of behaviors, and it's not all, you know, really bad, super bad personal behavior. I mean, someone who's consistently late can be considered toxic. You know, they're not pulling their load. People that gossip behind people's backs, people that call in sick when they're not sick. And then there's people that are screamers. I mean, you have the, you know, people that are really acting out. So you have people that yell, and that could be a boss. It could be anybody that yells at other people. Taking long lunch breaks. I mean, some of these things seem kind of minor, and in a way they are, because they're not those physically, you know, violent kind of things that might be really toxic or psychologically violent. But a lot of these things are toxic behaviors because they have an impact on the team. They have an impact on the coworkers, and they become negative to the workplace and negative to productivity and everything else.
Let's talk about the effects of that toxicity, because I would imagine that if you have a toxic workplace, you're going to find it hard to hang on to your good people. You're going to have obviously productivity issues. And some of those issues probably come from the top down as well. And so obviously, you know, the article that you wrote, you know, how to get rid of these five people or seven ways to get rid of these five people. But sometimes it might be just observing yourself and going, oh, I can't get rid of me. I'm the boss, you know. I can't get rid of me. So you know, maybe when we think about these behaviors, some of them don't seem so toxic when we talk about them, but we've got to understand the impact of those things and how they play out. So I know I'm covering a fair bit of territory just here, but I wanted to ask you, as we go through this, what are the impacts of a toxic workplace? How do we identify the people who might be the culprit? But equally, sometimes as leaders, we might be just as culpable as the next person. And how do we self-identify?
Yeah. So, yeah, the impacts are really pretty tremendous in many cases. So, for example, like you said, when there's a toxic workplace, people can become disengaged from their work. So, for example, I'm on a team. I've got somebody that's being toxic. I don't want to be a part of that team. I want to do something else. So I withdraw and I'm not engaged in my work. And if you've got a bunch of people who are being impacted negatively by that toxic person, they disengage and they want to get out of there. And in some cases, it's so bad that people will look for another job. I mean, people do leave their jobs. I mean, the number one reason why people say they leave their jobs is because of a bad boss. Gallup's done surveys, and they found that the number one reason people say that they leave their job is because of a bad boss. So, bad bosses are often the most toxic people in the workplace. And if you're the boss and you're a toxic boss, how do you do that? And I think the best bosses, the best leaders, well, everybody's different. We all have our own personalities, but the best leaders identify that they've got shortcomings, that they are maybe toxic in some way. Maybe they do scream a little bit, they get short with people, but they identify that and they do something about it. They don't just go on and then have people quit. And you don't want great people to quit. You want to keep your good people. Mm-hmm. You want to attract other good people. You don't want your organization to get the reputation that's a place where people shouldn't go to work. I mean, one of the most effective and the least expensive ways to recruit new employees is through your current employees. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who will recommend their friends, their colleagues, their relatives, whoever it might be, to you. They're going to say, you know, you ought to interview my cousin Jim, for example, because he's a great accountant. He'd be super for this company. But guess what? If you've got a toxic workplace, if you're a bad boss, a toxic boss, then that person's not going to recommend good people to you. So not only do you lose good people don't come to you. They're not attracted to your to your organization.
And I guess because most of our audience on this podcast are going to be business owners, they're dental practice owners, right, and they'll have teams, and it's easy to spot toxicity in someone else. It's easy to identify those behaviors, but it takes a level of introspection and reflection to identify which of your behaviors might be contributing to that poor workplace and having an adverse impact. So could we just touch on the self-reflection process for a moment and how to examine one's own self to identify what the impact of my behaviors or if I'm the boss, what might I be doing to contribute to this and how do I reconcile that?
Yeah. Well, you should become more self-aware, aware of your behavior. I mean, if you're in a situation where you've just made an employee upset, Why is that employee upset? What did you do to make that employee upset? Why is that person walking out of your office crying, whatever it might be, slamming the door, whatever? So look at yourself, look at yourself in the mirror. But I think even, you know, it's really important to let people know that you welcome their feedback, that if they see behaviors in you that aren't good ones, that they should come to you and let you know. And that's really a difficult thing for most people to do. I mean, most employees aren't going to run into their boss's office and say, hey, you know, you really should tone it down. You're making everybody upset. But that's the best source of feedback you have. Or from a peer, maybe a fellow business owner, someone in your community, they might get the word through the grapevine that, geez, you know, I'm hearing that some of your employees aren't very happy with the way you act. You know, they're not. In fact, one of your employees that quit last month, they work for me now. And guess what? They weren't too happy with your performance.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of sources. And I think you have to invite other people to give you that feedback. A mentor. I mean, if you have a mentor, and again, if you're a business owner, maybe you don't have a mentor per se, but I know there's organizations. I know here in the United States, there's like Entrepreneurs Organization where people get together, business owners, business founders get together and give each other feedback and advice and so forth. So if you come across poorly, take that feedback and use it, but be very self-reflective. And whenever something negative happens in your workplace that might be a result of something you've done, you know, look at yourself and ask yourself, what did I do that might have caused that situation?
Yeah, fantastic. So if we come to the realization that we do have some toxicity in the workplace, whether it's from other people or from ourselves, obviously the question then is, you know, we need to change. And that kind of comes back to workplace culture somewhat. So is there a relationship between toxicity and culture? And then, of course, how do we go about creating a more positive culture, a more inclusive, a more supportive culture by design rather than letting things just metamorphose as they will?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a, and I know that this was the case in a company I used to work for, that when you've got high performers, sometimes those high performers are toxic. And then we tolerate them. A business owner will tend to tolerate them. An executive, a CEO, whoever it might be, will tend to tolerate that person. So let's say, for example, your VP of sales, you've got a salesperson who's the most amazing salesperson in the world. But boy, they get people upset. They just get people really upset. And there's a culture. You create the culture by tolerating that kind of behavior. When you tolerate that behavior, you're creating a culture that says, if you're a great performer, then you can be a total jerk. That's fine. We're good with that. And that's the culture you're creating. And there's an old saying, a friend of mine, Bob Nelson, used to promote, you get what you reward. And if you reward bad behavior, you're going to get more of that. So guess what? Other people will say, well, geez, maybe I could act like that person too. Because why not? It might get me something for, you know, might make me feel better for whatever reason. So you're creating a culture that tolerates that. And that's the kind of culture most of us don't want to work in. And if you're a business owner, that's not the kind of culture that you want to promote. You want to create a culture where people feel that they feel good for going to work, that they want to go to work. There's more statistics about this that, I mean, there's millions of dollars lost every year to employees who just say, I'm going to call in sick today because I don't want to deal with that jerk, you know, that works next to me. I don't want to do it today. I'm calling in sick. And there's, you know, in the United States here, it's hundreds of millions of dollars lost every year. So it's a big number most any place. So create a culture of the kind of culture you'd want to work in.
Yeah. That type of person, the person who's very competent in their role, and, you know, the superstar salesman that's a jerk, we call that a C play. We've got a little 2x2 grid. So they're a culture fit or not, or they're a performer or not. And so we've got an ABC grid. And for us, that's the C player. And exactly your point, you get what you reward, or we say you get what you tolerate. Here's my question for you. If that person is a jerk, but they're very skilled at their role, in this case, a sales role, do you think a jerk can become a non-jerk and he can become an A player, essentially, still maintain that level of competency? Or do you think that once they're behaving in that way, trying to reel them in and get them to adjust their behavior, Is that an easy process or a difficult process? And have you seen it done successfully?
Yeah, I think that it depends on the person. Everybody's different. So I think some may be deep within their DNA. That's just the way their, you know, their DNA says it's expressed. Mm. You know, it's sending out the proteins that say, here's a jerk protein. So it's, the DNA does that. But I think that most people, I mean, there's many people who are jerks that aren't conscious of it.
Yeah,
it's not really a conscious thing, and it's not a malicious thing. They're not doing it intentionally to upset people. It's just a byproduct maybe of their upbringing. You know, they've grown up in a very vocal family that people yell and scream at each other, which is not uncommon. And they don't think that that's abnormal. That's something normal to them. So I think that, I know I've seen it. I've seen situations. I've done a lot of books with CEOs and business owners where they talk about that exact situation where they've had to counsel a high performer who's a jerk, who's toxic. And in many cases, that person either A, wasn't really aware of it. They didn't understand the impact they were having on their coworkers and then on the workplace. And when it was brought to their attention, they could reform, they could change. There are cases of that that I've taught. I mean, I've written them up in books. But there are some cases that it just can't be done. That's just the way the person is. No matter where they work, they're going to take that with them. And they just get passed from company to company. I mean, they perform for a while. They're great performers. Or they end up at a place where it doesn't matter. They could be the most toxic person in the world and the boss will tolerate it. But to say, fine, I don't care if everybody quits. As long as I've got this one person, then I'm good, kind of thing.
And again, that leads to, yeah, other challenges, which we can articulate in a minute. But one of the things I was thinking about in our audience here, Peter, is we've got a range of people with terms of experience in ownership of their business. You know, some are new to it, others are more seasoned, and then a whole lot in between. Almost without exception, the hardest thing that people deal with is that jerk. Almost without exception, because they don't know how to approach that conversation. They don't know how to say what they're feeling. They're worried about the repercussions. They're worried about losing the skill set that that person possesses. And it seems to me that even whether you're a seasoned business owner and you know that you need to address, you know, you need to address it, right? But everyone kind of is walking on eggshells and there's this sense of trepidation around that. So what I wanted to ask you for the less experienced as well as the more experienced people on this line, how do you initiate that conversation? Because I think that's can be quite challenging and it brings a bit of fear and a bit of dread to people.
Yeah, it is a difficult conversation and it's a courageous conversation. And it's a kind of conversation that any business owner, particularly a business owner where this is your livelihood, I mean, your business is going to rise or fall based on your ability to make these kinds of conversations, to make these decisions.
Yep.
So as long as you keep that in mind, I think the way we always talk about it is describe the impact it's having on other people. So Joe, when you do this, that happens. So when you embarrass people in a staff meeting, when you embarrassed Susan in the staff meeting, she decided to go home this afternoon because she was so upset. And, you know, you've got to link it to something that happens, that the impact that they're having on the organization. I've had 5 employees quit because of you, you know, and we just can't have that. I cannot, as the business owner, And yes, it's difficult. It's just a little bit less difficult than firing someone. You know, nobody wants to fire anybody.
No.
That's the last thing anybody wants to do. I had to fire people when I was a manager and I hated it. I don't think anybody enjoys it, but it's part of the job. And sometimes you have to, and sometimes that's the best thing for that person. So understand that there's two aspects. First of all, you're going to help the people that are being impacted negatively by that toxic person. And you might just be helping that toxic person too. Again, not every toxic person is consciously out to make a ruckus, out to cause trouble. Many are unconsciously doing this. Many aren't aware of the impacts that their bad behavior is having. So you're doing them a favor too. And if they don't sees that and grab it and say, oh boy, thank you so much for letting me know. I appreciate it. I will do the best I can to change my behavior in the future. If that doesn't happen, then that's really not the employee you want. I mean, I know it's if they're a high performer, you don't want to lose that. If they know something, they have some specific knowledge that it's hard to get. That's difficult. But believe me, there are the loss that you're having to your business, the productivity losses you're having from other employees, or not being able to retain good employees and having to recruit and then retrain and all those other expenses that go along with it, can be vastly greater than that one person's contribution to the organization.
Yeah, fantastic. You mentioned a moment ago, Peter, that the business owner's ability to have conversations is going to contribute to whether the business rises or falls throughout its lifespan. I wanted to ask you about leadership qualities that contribute to growth. What are the things that the positive behaviors, the positive attributes that you've seen in great leaders who have been able to steer their companies, steer their businesses through challenging periods and come out the other side and obviously perform well and do well? What sort of attributes would you say are contributing to that?
Yeah, I think that the ones that I've seen I've seen businesses that have gone, you know, through tough times. I mean, obviously during COVID, a lot of businesses have had to pull back, and then even just in other times for various reasons, businesses have to pull back. They have to lay people off or whatever. But I think the best business owners that I've seen, they always have their eye on the sort of their vision, the North Star of their vision that guides them. And they want to create the greatest product, the greatest service, the best thing that they can. And they're always looking at that as their North Star. That's where they're always, that guides them throughout all of this. And you know, as a business owner, it's going to not always be great. You may be growing 1 year, and the next year you may have to retrench and lay people off. You may have to let go of some business line, sell something off, whatever it might be, move into a less expensive office. You know, there's a variety of different things, but you're still always trying to deliver the best service, trying to create the best products, and, you know, always keep your eye on that vision. I mean, that's what I've seen time after time again. And inevitably the people I've seen, when they do that, they can go through the worst times you can imagine. I wrote a book where I interviewed 100 entrepreneurs, and in every single one of those cases, the entrepreneur had tremendous success, followed by massive failure, and then tremendous success again. And okay. In each of those cases, it was because they went through all kinds of bad things, you know, embezzlement. They had, you know, their accountant embezzled all their money. They went through a bad divorce. They went, you know, employees went on strike, you know, you name it, floods, hurricanes, everything.
Yeah. Wow.
But they kept their eye on their vision. They kept that vision, that North Star there all the time, and they bounced back.
So let's talk about that resilience, because I'm listening to those 100 entrepreneurs who've obviously ridden the wave of success. They've done very well, and then they've come crashing down, and then they've been able to get back up again, because that's another attribute that I think is a really important one for business owners, and it's an important one for life indeed. So can you speak to the concept of resilience in business for a second, and how to develop resilience, how to build that muscle or to flex that muscle?
Yeah. Well, resilience is a muscle, and it's something you gain through going through adversity. And I think we all go through adversity. You know, what is the saying? You know, you get knocked down once, you get up twice. I don't know if there's something like that.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you get knocked down, you get up again. You don't just stay on the ground laying there and going, oh my God, what am I going to do? You just get up and you get back to work. I mean, people ask me, how did you write 100 books? How did you write 125 books, whatever the number is right now? I just do it. I get up in the morning, I get to work, and I do it. And that's resilience. And I have tough books. Sometimes the books are tougher than others. I think that's true with business owners. You know, you've got tough times. You know, an employee walks in and quits. A bunch of clients move away and you lose these great clients you had, whatever it might be. You just got to just keep at the work. You just bounce back. You don't let it get you down. Sure, you might suffer for a little bit, but then you get back to work.
Yeah, I really love that. And I think you're right. I think it is a muscle, and I think it becomes a habit as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what I wanted to ask you is, when we're thinking about leadership and leading teams and dealing with toxicity, but dealing with that, but then creating a more positive experience as an alternative, I wanted to ask you about, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what surprises you in that journey? What, you know, when you think about the people you've interviewed or other things, what are the things you kind of think, you know what, I wouldn't have picked that. That was not on my radar. What are the things that you observe that have surprised you over the years?
I think what surprised me most is that there's no one kind of best leader. You know, there's just a variety of best leaders. You know, I think there's often this tendency for people like me to write books or to write articles that say, do these seven things and you'll be a great leader.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just do these seven things and you'll be a great leader. You can't miss, you know. But when you really look at the universe of leaders out there, there are all kinds of people. And I think the things that surprise me the most are people who never planned to be a leader, that never planned to be a business owner, to be a business person. They just sort of fell into it. Maybe they invented something. You know, they invented a great surfboard, for example, or a skateboard, you know, some product. They invented something. And all of a sudden, they started a business around it. And then before you knew it, they're doing $500,000, $1 million, $10 million of business. And they're a business leader. They by default, they become a business leader. And I think the best ones are all different kinds of people. That's all I've seen, is that there's no one kind of person that's a great leader.
And that's really interesting, because if there's no one type of leader that fits a particular mold, I guess that comes back to developing one's own leadership style and so on. I guess that then follows that there's not one way to approach leadership. There's not one, as you say, there's no seven easy steps to follow around leadership. And we're all kind of wired for shortcuts. You know, give us the cookbook, give us the recipe, give us the A, Bs, and Cs. So if we understand that there's more nuance and more shades of gray than we would care to imagine, if we can't give a step-by-step cookbook approach to leadership, what sort of things should people be thinking about then as they approach leadership?
Yeah, well, there are definitely, if it's not a cookbook per se, I would definitely say that there are certain characteristics of great leaders. So, for example, I think the best leaders communicate well. Mm-hmm. They communicate often. They communicate transparently, you know. So, for example, I think the worst leaders are the ones that we used to call it mushroom management. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd put you in the dark and shovel the stuff on you.
It starts with S, at least, doesn't it?
It starts with S, yeah, stuff, S word.
Yeah, that one.
But the best leaders communicate. And I think, you know, going back to what I said about there's different kinds of people and different kinds of leaders, different kinds of leaders communicate in different ways. I mean, some ways, when I work on a book, some of the people I work with on books, some of the CEOs I work with, the company owners, consultants, some of them are great presentation people. They make great presentations. They can stand up in front of a group of 1,000 people, no problem. Talk it for an hour, turn them on, and they're great. They're incredible. Some of them aren't. Some of them, that's not who they are. They're writers. They'll write memos. They'll write emails. They'll write texts. But they still communicate. So I think the best leaders are great communicators, but they do it in different ways. So depending on the kind of leader, depending on their own style, they may communicate in different ways. Clearly, another characteristic that's really important for leaders is honesty, you know? I think that a lot of leaders, and I know I write about this, I've written about this a million times, that there's leaders who are afraid to tell their people the truth because they're afraid that they'll get upset. You know, for example, the truth might be we lost, you know, a chunk of our 10% of our sales last month. It's bad news. I'm going to have to lay somebody off, that kind of thing. They don't want to do that. They don't want to tell their employees the truth, what's going on, because they're afraid that people get upset. But I think that the best leaders are honest. They let their people know what's going on. They're transparent. They keep them apprised of what's happening with the business, the good and the bad.
Who, in your experience, and I know you've interviewed lots of people, I'm wondering if there's a particular leader that, you know, our listeners might be aware of who you think embodies that well, even though they'll have their own style. But is it, I guess, looking at someone for an example who you might think, yeah, they do that really well. Who would be a role model in some of those areas, do you think?
Yeah. Well, I know here in the U.S., there's a guy named Alan Mulally. And he was most recently, the CEO of Ford Motor Company. Mm. And before that, he was, a senior vice president at Boeing, or maybe a president of one of the business units at Boeing Aircraft. Mm. You know, they create the big 747, 737, 757s, all those 77s. Mm. But anyway, he was a really great business. He's retired now, so I don't think he's in active practice as far as an executive any longer. But he was a great leader who brought the L, you know, we talked about the S word. Here's the L word. He brought love into the workplace. Mm. And he's a big believer, and he wasn't afraid to say it. Managers need to love their employees, and obviously not in a romantic way, but they really need to care for them. They really need to really care about their people and be concerned about their people and be there for their people, you know, back them up and support them. But he talked about it in terms of love, and that's a word not often used in workplaces. But he brought that into Ford, and I think it made a huge difference in the way he was received and in the response he got from the employees. I mean, they have over 100,000 employees, I'm sure, mm-hmm. Many of them manufacturing, working in big factories, and they're union employees and so forth. And he did really well there. He turned the company around. The company was having a tough time, and he turned them around. So I think a lot of that was a result of what he did and how he did it.
Fantastic. Is there a place also for loving your clients?
Oh, yeah, that's where it all starts, right? Mm. I mean, we should definitely love our clients. We've got to love our employees too. Mm. But for sure, we got to love our clients. Mm. And we want them to love us. I mean, it should be a mutual admiration society for sure.
Absolutely.
Because I know I love my clients. I love them. The thing I love about working on books is that I meet the most amazing people. I've worked with the most amazing people in the world. And I do. I work with people all around the world. I have clients, a couple of them in Spain right now, somebody in Germany, nobody in Australia at the moment, but maybe one of these days, somebody in India. So, you know, it's just I meet amazing people. But yeah, I love my clients, and every business owner should love their clients deeply.
And I think it's, yeah. And I mean, I know it sounds obvious when I say it out loud, but I think it's not assuming that the client knows that you love them. It's also about demonstrating that and communicating that, and with deeds as much as anything else.
Yeah. And with words. I mean, just a simple thank you. Mm. How often do people get thank yous, especially a client from the person who's doing the work for them? Mm. I just wrapped a book last night. I mean, I literally last night wrapped a book, sent the manuscript off to the publisher. And I told my client, we were talking yesterday as we were wrapping up, you know, our final changes for the manuscript. I just thanked him. I said, you know, thank you so much for choosing me to do this project. Mm. I mean, it's been such a joy working with you and getting the opportunity to, we interviewed some amazing people that he'd worked with over the years. He's a venture capital guy in the Silicon Valley. Mm. And we interviewed some amazing people, people that have been in Apple, you know, for back in the old days and stuff, and heard stories about Steve Jobs and all this stuff. It's just, to me, it was just like, wow. And I thanked him very profusely.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to thank your clients.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Let them know. Let them know.
Well, it's my turn to thank you, actually, Peter, to say thank you to you for coming onto our show and sharing so generously. You've been a wonderful guest to have on our show, very easy to talk to, and I feel like I could talk to you for hours on end. I wanted to wrap up our conversation by asking about the gospel according to Peter, whether it's to do with the toxicity in the workplace, whether it's to do with leadership. If there were two or three pearls of wisdom or nuggets of gold or whatever it is we want to call it, yeah, for the people running businesses who are at the coalface day in, day out,
What sort of wisdom or pearls of wisdom or thoughts would you like to leave the audience with as they go about their journey?
Yeah, I think the most important thing that I think about is that you've got to be human. As a business owner, as a manager, as an executive, whatever it might be, or an employee, be human. And remember that the people that work for and with you are human beings who have lives, aspirations, dreams, just like you do. And that you are part of their life and you're part of how they're going to get to their aspirations. And just keep that in mind, you know, be human and remember that that those people working for you are human and treat them like family, like people, like valued people that they are.
Wonderful. Ladies and gents, if you would like to read more of Peter's work, I really commend it to you. You can find Peter's website, which is petereconomy.com, and he's got many, many books. But in particular, I'd direct you to What I'm Working With Who and Wait, I'm the Boss. I'd really encourage you to get hold of those couple of books in particular. There's 125 of them to choose from, though, so there's a lot out there. And I'd really encourage you to head across to Peter's website and check out his stuff. Also, check out his articles in Inc. magazine as well. So, again, Peter, thank you so much. It has been a really fun conversation for me to talk to you about this stuff because I really love the human element that you bring to it because all of us are people. We're all going through our day-to-day lives as running businesses or working businesses, and I really like the human element you bring to it. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jesse. It was really great to be here with you today.
It's fun. Thanks, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.